You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 44. And today we welcome Carla onto the show. Now, I'm very excited to bring Carla on. As you know, if you listen to this show regularly, I don't know the dreams until the dreamer comes on. And that's why I get all excited. But I had an extra reason to be excited about bringing Carla on. And that is that I know that she's been studying her own dreams very deeply for quite a long time. And she did contact me and say that she's got one or two dreams that she has her interpretation done, and that she'd be really interested to see how I saw her dreams. So here we go. Welcome, Carla.
Well, thank you.
And you told me you've got a short dream for me today.
I do, and I picked this dream because it's the first dream that I remember. It doesn't mean it's the first dream I had, but it just had a big impact on me. It felt like a revelation. So I was curious to see what you might think of it. It was a dream that I had quite a long time ago. So here's the dream. I'm being led off to my execution. As they lead me away, a group of soldiers in khaki uniforms are chanting, "It's important you enjoy what you're doing. It's important you enjoy what you're doing." We come to the place of execution, which is a large chopping block covered with a black and white grid. I have the realization that when my head is chopped off, my red blood flowing over the black and white grid will create a work of art.
Is that the end of the dream?
That's the end of the dream.
I'm not surprised. I'm sure you probably woke up in shock at that one.
I did indeed. So you didn't... I mean, the juxtaposition of these people telling me I should be enjoying myself while leading me to my execution.
I love it. So you didn't actually get as far as the chop and actually seeing the blood. It's more that you envisaged it as you woke up.
Yes. Well, or envisioned it in the dream. I'm not sure, but it wasn't, I didn't get actually executed.
Did you have, you were going to be, so you knew that in the dream. You knew you were definitely going to go through the process in the dream.
That's how it felt, yes.
And the soldiers in the dream, when they were chanting, go through the chant again, "You must enjoy..."
It's important you enjoy what you're doing.
What you're doing. And you got the feeling that they were telling you that, or was it also their own mantra as they were going along? Like, "We are going to kill it. It's important that you enjoy what you're doing. We believe we're going to really enjoy this execution." Or was it all directed at you?
I felt it was directed at me.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, it is a beautiful short dream, but what an impactful one, I can fully imagine. So how many years ago roughly was this, Carla?
Oh, gosh. Well, probably about 35, 40 years ago. I was a young woman and on my own. And I think I was at the point in my life where I was trying to figure out, you know, what should I do with the rest of my life kind of thing.
Yeah. So it was a seminal moment. Okay. Very sharp, very clear dream. And I'm really, really keen to know, further how it relates. So you've got the feeling there that there is definitely an end. There is an end happening here that you cannot get out of under any circumstances. And of course, in life, we can only ever move forward and change and embrace change if we let go of the old. We can't go on to the new without letting go of the old. And so letting go of the old, or the need to let go of the old in dreams, is sometimes or quite often seen in a death metaphor of some kind. In your one, it didn't appear to be something that you'd chosen yourself. It was something that appeared to be imposed upon you. But it was definitely a feeling of, right, that's it. There is no going back. I'm going through a change now. There was no sense in the dream as to what that change was, apart from the fact that after the moment of execution, once the old was definitely gone, there'd be a sense of this lovely red color running all over what was otherwise quite black and white and structured. And the feeling, even in your dream, even facing the horror of the execution, the feeling, Carla, that, oh, well, that would make a lovely pattern. That would make good art. So there was a kind of opening there, and you're almost a birth of the new of, if this thing happens, because the only way to get this blood to flow, the only way to get this red happening was actually to chop something from your life to start again, to begin anew. There are many levels through this, and I'm going to go through them. So that's kind of like the essence of the dream. And the men all around you in uniform, all looking exactly the same, and all in khaki or a khaki, depending on our pronunciation from different parts of the world. Uniform, I mean, you don't get much more of a boring color than that, or even a rigid color than that. You know, it's even worse than black and white, really. So it was uniform. It was kind of like rules, regulation, all in step. A little bit like the black and white checks on the grid over the chopping block as well. This is rigid. It's either black or it's white. There are no colors in between. This is how things are. This is the pattern. This is the army. This is the authority. This is what's going to happen next. There's all that kind of feeling on the one hand versus the flow and the color of red and the excitement and the nascent idea. Ooh, this could make good art. This could be a good thing. So powerful that it almost overcame the fear of the execution, or kind of enabled the acceptance of the execution. And the kind of mantra throughout all of that is that you must enjoy what you're doing. If you're not enjoying it, then, you know, there's no outcome. And that's why I was happy that the soldiers weren't really directing this mantra at themselves. It's not like you will have a boring life and you must try to enjoy it while you're doing it. It was almost like, if you want to escape your fate of being one of us, then lay your head upon the block, and your head, your thinking, as opposed to your heart and your feeling. You know, the thinking side of yourself, the part that's maybe rational, maybe all in the head, lay that on the block, chop that off. That will enable something to flow. Disconnect from that. Disconnect from rationality, perhaps at least for a while. Disconnect from black and white thinking. Disconnect from order, from what people expect of you in a kind of almost military, precise, this is what you do, rigid fashion. And let something flow. Let blood as your vitality, your life force, your passion. Let it flow. That's the change, because in seeing that flow, you're actually getting in touch with something that you enjoy, which in the dream you see as art. So that's the basics as I would see the dream coming in. How does that relate, thinking back those 35 years?
I'm sorry, how does
that feel when you think back 35 years?
Oh, yeah. I think that your interpretation is spot on. I've been thinking about the dream, of course, myself, since I knew I was going to present it to you. And that was very similar to what I felt about it, exactly what you said.
That's fantastic. And what did you actually do at the time?
Oh, I was probably working for a corporation. It's hard for me to remember exactly what I was doing at that time, but I might have been making a transition from working in a sort of corporate setting to becoming a clothing designer.
Ah. And did your first works with your clothing design, did they tend to be more flowing rather than geometric, more color rather than black and white?
Well, I don't know. Probably not.
Did you enjoy what you were doing when you moved into fashion design? I know it's hard to think back that number of years, but is there any sense that you can look back and see that, you know, that did mark a change in your life from perhaps being moving along in a kind of structured way to moving along in a more free-flowing and liberating way in other areas of your life apart from your career?
I think it probably did, and I think it was a definite change, you know, in what I felt was important to me, mm-hmm. that I was becoming aware of.
Mm. That's beautiful. And because we've got that short, sharp dream done really tightly there, and we're all in agreement with that, and it was a long time ago, would you like to, and a beautiful demonstration for people listening in of a dream interpretation and the effect it had on your life at the time, the effect the dream had on your life at the time, would you like to introduce a more recent dream?
Yes, I have another one. This one is far more recent, probably within the last couple of years. And it's long, but the reason I chose it is that it also has these Nazi characters in it. And I thought it was interesting that there was some consistency in that, and that it might be interesting to pick up on. Okay. This one, I call this like a bodice ripper.
I missed that. Sorry, you called it a?
Bodice ripper.
Oh, bodice ripper. Good.
A young woman, certainly not a member of the nobility, marries a viscount. The dream is set in a Nordic country. Both the viscount and the lady are tall, very attractive, and blonde. Initially, the dream appears to be set in the 18th century, judging by the clothing. Paniers are not in evidence, but the clothing is long, bodices are tight, and undergarments are long, white, and ruffled. This might not be a love match. The man wants an heir and is attracted to the woman's beauty. The woman is making a large leap socially. Both are very concerned that the woman's behavior should be correct and appropriate. The marriage has been celebrated, and it is the wedding night. The lady and the viscount are in a cloakroom or closet, which is situated behind the bedroom. They share one bedroom. The lady, new to this class and situation, looks to her husband for clues on how to behave. He disrobes. She observes him in his 18th century shirt with no trousers. He takes off his clothing layer by layer, placing it on hangers, and puts the hangers on hooks that protrude from the wall. She's surprised by such tidiness, having thought that this would be a job for the servants. She mimics her new husband, disrobing, placing her garments on hangers, and hanging these up. It is a passionless scene, and as I observe, I run varying scenarios for the wedding night. Will the husband be concerned about his new wife's pleasure or merely do the deed? Is the lady a virgin? If so, will she be able to enjoy the act? If not, will the viscount be seriously displeased? We don't get the answer to any of these questions. Instead, we learn that the lady works very hard to be modest and proper, and that she refers to her husband formally in the third person as the viscount in public, but she's allowed to be more familiar privately. The lady dresses very simply, plainly even, in order to emphasize her propriety. She does not adorn herself in any way. Nevertheless, she's so beautiful that the estate workers fight over her. She never looks at them in order not to be seen to encourage such behavior. Meanwhile, it's not clear whether or not the viscount is faithful. There's a closed chapel on the estate. It's crammed into what looks like a row of townhouses. The workers are petitioning to have it opened, not because they are interested in religion, but because they know that if the chapel is operating, the lady will have to attend, and they want to gaze upon her. The viscount knows this and feels as if they've put him over a barrel by pretending to want to go to church. In one scene, the lady makes an error by referring to her husband as count instead of viscount. The plot seems to be advancing very slowly, but I know what's going to happen. While the estate and the people still appear to be from the 18th century, World War II has begun. A great social change is in the works. The castle walls with their crenellated surfaces are covered with missiles and rockets to be used against the Axis powers. Yet I know the Nazis will prevail and this land will be occupied by the Germans. The lady and the viscount will hide an Indian woman from the racist occupiers. I see a small attic access point in the ceiling. It has a couple of pieces of cloth hanging from it. At first, I think that this is where they will hide the woman, but then I think, no, that's too obvious. They know every nook and cranny of this vast estate, and they will find a secure hiding place. It also occurs to me that the practiced artificiality of their lives, the fact that they're hard to read and don't show what's going on with them, will make it easier for them to fool the Germans. And that's it.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, great recall too. And when you gave the dream, it's interesting, there's a lot there, Carla. And sometimes when we give the dream a title, we also inadvertently give a clue to the interpretation. So I was quite interested when you called it a bodice ripper, because I thought we've just moved from that dream 35 years ago where the idea was to lop off the head, the thinking part, to a dream, yes, where you open the bodice to reveal the heart, the beating heart. So it's kind of like moving from chopping off the head to focusing more on the heart, if the dream title is, you know, anything to go by. And then, you know, one recurring theme or one recurring motif through that dream that you just so beautifully read out there, was that, the pull between the two opposites of, on the one hand, restraint and doing things carefully and doing things almost passionlessly. And on the other side, the kind of bordering towards the question of, well, where is the passion? Or there were actually symbols of passion there in the townspeople, the landspeople are connected to the land. There's more flowing and connection and nature there. So there were kind of several references to more passion versus less passion, which we can come into later. So the kind of, there's an overall theme in the dream there of, are we going to rip open this bodice or not? Are we going to get to the passion and the heart of this matter or not? And there was also a question of enjoyment. You used the word enjoy somewhere through there as well. So before going into it in great depth, I'd say that because the dream always reflects what's been going on for you the day or two before, when you had this dream 2 years ago, you were probably going through a period where you were about to go through another breakout, go through another big change. You know, after all, World War II was coming. There was some massive conflict happening here and lots of questions of breaking through from 18th century restriction, which we'll come back to. And yeah, ready for that change. But as always in life, the moment where we're ready to step forward and change something, we will often take a giant step backwards for a bit of, you know, back into comfort zone and perhaps back into the kind of more rigid military, what would people think if I did it differently kind of approach. So I think that's kind of what we're playing with. And I'll just pick out some little things from there, Carla, to kind of put that together and then come back to you and see what you made of it, because I know you will have worked hard on this dream as well. I do want to ask a couple of questions. Nordic, they were Nordic. What do you have any particular association yourself with Nordic?
Well, I don't actually. I guess in a way, I find it a romantic part of the world. It's, you know, that almost doesn't make sense because, of course, there's the idea of frozen.
Yeah.
But somehow there's a certain beauty in all of that too.
Okay.
I did visit Denmark. Very briefly, but that's about the only association that I have with it.
Well, I'm going to jump in at what you said there, because you actually unfolded it beautifully there, Carla. You said it's essentially a very beautiful country, a beautiful people, but at the same time, of course, and the more common, you know, idea, I guess, around the world is we think it's a cold place, a frozen place. And that's where I was coming from in association with a dream, thinking, yes, this is a person who is questioning their passion, the Nordic girl in the dream, you know. Is she a bit of an ice princess or an ice queen or a potential ice queen? And how much can she warm up or not? But as you said, but there is beauty in that. So 2 years ago when you had the dream, I guess you were, exploring a belief, conscious or unconscious, that you have that, that there is beauty in sometimes withholding and sometimes not having, wearing your heart on your sleeve, in sometimes exploring, the more containment side of things, you know, and perhaps there's that even in that dream 35 years ago before the blood was, expected to be spilled on the black and white, there is still a beauty and a balance and a black and white check. You know, checked pattern.
Yes.
Yeah. So it may be that at that time, 2 years ago, you were exploring all of that. You know, I am ready in some extent to rip open my bodice and get even more, you know, let my passion show even more or get more into my passionate side. And I am going to add more to that. But by the same token, let me just step back way into my past here again, because I actually do see a beauty in the slightly frozen. There is something there, something that holds back and stands aloft. And it's maybe more in the head, because the Nordic countries are in the north of the world, you know, they're up there,
yeah.
That I really admire. And you know, one connection there may be that you may have thought 2 years ago with whatever it was that you were planning, well, if I go to show this more passionate side of myself, or I let my emotions show in a certain area, or I move my career into this area or whatever, that I may lose some kudos because people will forget to notice that I'm actually a deeply intelligent person, that I've got a thinking head. you know, and I like to have. I like that kind of cool rationality, Nordic, careful, contemplative, black and white check as well. You saw the clothes as 18th century, and they were, from what you described. And now, knowing that you have been a fashion designer, and I don't know whether you still are, but you've been a fashion designer, you would have that pretty spot on. And it's also quite interesting that despite that, when we dream about something being, say, 18th century, and we say, oh, it was 18th century, it sometimes can be a reference back to when you were in your 18th year. Because dreams do play with numbers and often drop off the zeros or the centuries. So have a little think about what happened in your 18th year. So when you were 17, around being noted for your intelligence, what you thought about if I show my passions, whether I will feel less confident or feel judged against for appearing to be I don't know, you know, a beautiful bimbo instead of an intelligent woman, that kind of thing, making a career choice that you feel may be, or you felt at age 17, people may have judged you as, you know, well, I expected a woman with an intelligence like that to be, you know, a brain scientist. What's she doing being a fashion designer or whatever, you know, that, yeah, there's a beauty in the Nordic. Another big strong theme in this more recent dream was the contrast between obviously the nobility and the people of the land. The people of the land being in touch with the ground, with what's natural, and the nobility to some extent kind of being more governed by structures and concepts. And the pull in the dream, you know, and you're, as you're standing watching this couple and asking all the interesting questions about the, you know, will the bodice be ripped on the wedding night? It's all the questions about, you know, how much in touch are they with nature, you know, with being grounded, and how do I, Carla, feel about this? Because this is a struggle within me too. And later on, there's the church thing I want to come back to. But the essence of the conflict is coming, the big World War II, the Nazis are coming. There's discrimination in the air. So this is exploring, beliefs within yourself where you have possibly discriminated against yourself in the past, possibly against intelligence or against apparent non-intelligence, one or the other. And this lovely idea of hiding the Indian in the roof, like the Indian is the natural part of yourself that you may or may not have, not literally, I don't know whether you have any Indian heritage. I'm talking about Indian as a general symbol for indigenous and in touch with nature, and that part of yourself that you want to hide somewhere. And in the dream, you say, oh, wouldn't hide, the roof's the obvious place to hide it. Well, you know, again, the roof could be the intelligent mind, the brain, you know, I'll just sort of cover up that I've got great grounding, great natural instincts, because I don't want those to show. But coming back to the church thing, which is the last thing I'll touch on before, because I've hogged the floor for too long to toss it back to you, was this church thing. And I was interested that, as you said, it wasn't so much a symbol of religion in the dream. It was a way that the people on the land hoped to be able to entice the woman out, to be able to see her, to be able to be in contact with her rather than her to be aloof. So you have a place which appears to be a church, but isn't bound by religion, and it's more about being in touch and seeing something of great beauty, which to me sounds more like spirituality, a place that, you know, the spiritual place is not a place aloft and bound by concepts and a kind of royalist or monarchist tradition, or even an 18th century tradition. The spiritual place is in touch with the earth, in touch with the ground, in touch with the passions rather than, you know, the experience rather than the mind. So there's a lot more in the dream, but I'm just going to tie up that and throw it back to you by saying, of course, all elements in a dream are aspects of the dreamer. So my feeling is that these were the struggles and what was happening for you at that time. Over to you at this point.
Well, I think your interpretation sounds very interesting and, of course, very astute and close. I was thinking about this dream that a big issue for me, I think, in analyzing my dreams over the years is integrating what Jung calls the woman's inner man, which would basically be the part of myself that deals with the outside world. And I saw this dream, perhaps too narrowly, but I saw it as an attempt to bring the feminine as represented by the lady and the masculine as represented by the Viscount together. And I don't know if that would make any sense to you. That, what do you think? Does that sound at all sensible?
Absolutely, Carla. Yes, there were lots of points I didn't touch on there, and I totally agree there. It was, you know, any stranger male or any stranger female in a dream represent parts of yourself, and I would totally agree with you. There's the female, or, you know, you call it the inner female and the inner male. I would sometimes say yin and yang. I would sometimes say your male side, your female side. I'd sometimes say your left brain, your right brain for all of these. But absolutely, there was an imminent marriage. It was bringing together two aspects of yourself, as you say, trying to put in balance the inner male and the inner female, to use your terminology. And that is a Jungian theme. And you see it certainly through a lot of dreams, this coming together of the inner world and the outer world, because, you know, we can often, particularly as women, we can often be beautifully developed within our own selves, and sometimes find a block as to how to express that in a world which sometimes, and particularly in the past, has been largely male dominated. And so we wonder about how to step out into that and express ourselves in our outer world, wearing our own version of our inner male. We don't want to be maybe the Nazi. We don't want to be maybe, we don't want to be the Viscount. I don't know. We want our own feminine version of the outer world male. And because you had in the dream there, the marriage had actually taken place. It was okay. I've begun to integrate my male and female side 2 years ago. I'm ready to step out in a slightly different way. Now, how will this be? How will it turn out? How will the wedding night, how will my first day out in the new world be? And that's where the questions then come up as well. You know, in moving myself into the outer world, will I be able to really let that passion show and move with a different kind of spirituality and a different kind of groundedness, and yet also still retain that intellectual beauty, which is what I see in the Nordic princess, Nordic to be queen there, Viscountess. but still a bit of a struggle, you know, about what to do with other bits like the Indian. I was interested in, just before throwing it back to you again, the Viscount, and you said I mistakenly called him the Count at one stage, which I guess could be a play on, you know, counting or judging or what counts and what doesn't count. But Viscount, any particular association with you on Viscount or what Viscount could mean to you?
Well, the only thing that I could come up with was that Viscount sounds an awful lot like I count. Mm-hmm. So I'm important. Mm-hmm. This character is saying I count.
That's great. I love that. And counting's got a kind of rationality about it as well, even on another level. I mean, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. But on another level, it's like totting up the, you know, the things that count as well about me. And highborn, got the title. You're entitled to, you know, to be counted and to have all those things count in your life. It was really the question of how to do all of the above and rip the bodice open.
Right. It's always the reconciliation of opposites, isn't it?
It is. And it's amazing. I mean, how many dreams you can look at. And sometimes the opposites jump out at you and sometimes they don't. Sometimes it can be a while before they're there. But yeah, I think it's one of the eternal quests of all of us is to find the reconciliation of opposites, as you say. In other words, to find the balance, the middle path, the Chinese Tao, the path between extremes. Particularly in that, the balance of our, whether we're man or woman, the balance between our inner male and our inner female. You know, how rarely do we get it right? When you look around you, how rarely do we get it right? You know, the man who's judged for being too feminine in his expression, the woman who's judged for being too masculine in her expression. You know, there are shining, stunning examples where we look at man or woman and say, you've got it right. You so have it right. You have your inner world and your outer world in perfect balance. And, you know, I think those are the things you're struggling with in the dream. What about that issue with the church and religion and spirituality and groundedness? What did you make of that?
Well, that is an issue that does come up in my dreams pretty clearly. In this particular case, I saw it a little bit differently. I saw that scene as a turning point in the relationship between the two characters of the lady and the Viscount. I saw the beginning as a marriage of convenience. They're married, but they're not really comfortable, and it's not really, they're not working together. They're just kind of together because they need to be for other reasons, not from a pure desire for each other.
Yeah.
When we get to the scene with the chapel, it seemed to me that the chapel represented something regenerative, and the chapel is closed, so that's not looking so good. But the fighting workers are demanding that it be reopened. So again, they're the energy there to get this regeneration going, as you pointed out earlier, with their being closer to the earth and more alive in certain ways. But the Viscount in this scene is outfoxed by these workers, and so he loses some of his power. Mm. They are demanding that he open this, and he can hardly say no, because then he looks like he's not religious, and this is the 18th century. And so he's a little bit, comes down to the lady's level a little more. They begin to get on a more equal footing, and the lady makes a slip calling him Count instead of Viscount, which is a little lower rank. So I think that's another little indication that he's slipped down a little. And the fact that he has makes it possible for the two characters to do something positive, which is hide the Indian woman in the next scene.
Mm. Why did you need to hide the... Oh, I mean, I know in the dream why you needed to hide the Indian woman from the Nazis, but I wonder, looking back 2 years ago at what was happening in your life then, why, even though you thought, yes, I agree with everything you said there, I'm coming down closer to earth, I may lose some of that in the head stuff, or aloofness, or quieter, or some of that ice queen intellect that I do see beauty in, but I'm coming closer to that. Why was there still the drive, do you think, to need to hide another part of yourself, an Indian, an authentic part of yourself? Why do you think the Nazis were there? Which part of yourself was coming in to go... to judge, because in the dream they were racially intolerant. Which part of yourself was intolerant of this coming down to ground?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, this is probably so inborn and so deep-seated that it's the part that, you know, grew up in a sort of demanding world. I think when I was a youngster, things were far more rigid, and right was right and wrong was wrong. And my family was Russian, and they're kind of known to be, I don't know if they're known to be, but they are somewhat Germanic, surprisingly. This is the way you do it, and this is right, and that's wrong, and we split hairs over grammar, and there's, you know, a right way to do everything. So that's a pretty ingrained part that I have to both honor, because it does make it possible to do things well, but also I have to, you know, keep it under control, because it's too restrictive.
Mm. And interesting, reflective, you know, through the years of Russia's history, which you will know far greater than I, you know, from the nobility, the czars, which, you know, lost their standing, if not their lives, from one day to the next, you know, and the people of the people of the land becoming the, you know, for a while at least, becoming the strong force. So there's kind of that background history probably passed down through your generations too, of that conflict there, of the difficulty of finding a middle path. Would you say?
Yes. Yes, and I don't think Russia's found it yet, sadly.
No. So if we went back to, and again, I know it's a big ask for, you know, when we've had so many life experiences, but if you went back to your 18th century, which was the year that you were 17, and we looked in the year that you were 17 at some of the issues we've been talking about in the dream. What stands out for you there? Can you remember anything in particular about being 17 going towards 18?
Well, not really. I was at university, probably studying very hard. And that's, I mean, it's just a big blur at this point.
Well, I won't ask too many questions about your first year at university and the big blur. You were probably out in the world. You weren't living at home when you went to university. You were out in the big wide world.
I was. I started very young. I started at 16, and I wasn't really comfortable living at the school, and it was a big expense. So, you know, it was kind of easier for me to live at home. So I didn't get out on my own until I was about 20 when I did live on my own.
Okay. So you were in a situation where, and we won't go into it much more deeply, Carla, but we were in a situation there where, to put it on a very light level, and everybody else's bodices were being ripped but yours, because you
I didn't know who ones were back in those days, but I probably just didn't know.
That's right. So there's that sense of, yeah, you know, back then, your guarding of the beauty of the Nordic part of yourself, not Nordic Russian, but Nordic metaphorically, you know, the beauty of the intellect. Which, as a 16-year-old going to university, which I was too, so I can totally relate to what you're saying there, it's quite a different experience to going to university at 18, 19, or 20. And you get to university at 16 because you have prized your intellect probably above other things, you know? So there was probably that period of time there where you were holding on to the beauty of that. And as you say, perhaps, you know, missing actually flowing, perhaps even choosing, did you choose a subject that wasn't so much in flow with your passion and was more what people expected of you with a high intellect?
No, I chose English, and I love to read and write. So I was very happy with that as a choice.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
Oh, that's good. Mm. That's great.
I think there's, that's an interest. Yeah, I chose English to learn to read and write. So there may also have been, did you think about writing a book 2 years ago?
I don't think so.
It was just a leap in the dark because that dream came up then, and there was something about going back to the 17th, you know, 18th century when you were 17 and watching my open up and connecting back, you know, in some way with that. But I think we've probably been and explored around about deep enough. Was there anything else you wanted to, because I do want to just mention dream alchemy with respect to the dream, but did you want to mention anything else about this dream before we move to there?
You know, I think we've really covered it pretty well. Thank you.
Okay, so there's no point really giving you a dream alchemy practice to go and do now, because this pertains to 2 years ago. But I want to talk about, like, what if, you know, what if this was a recent dream? What dream alchemy practice will we give? Because it's great for the listeners to be able to move from the interpretation of a dream to making the difference. But just before going there, are you able to throw any light on what was happening for you 2 years ago when you had this dream that you can now say, oh, that's why the dream came up?
You know, I'm really sorry. I can't. I do have this one trait that I kind of remember what I did yesterday and maybe what I'm doing today, and then everything's a blank. So unless I could probably try to find at some point some notes that I might have taken, but I really don't have any recollection.
No, look, don't go down there. If you're at a place of living in the, you know, immediate past, the immediate present, and the immediate future, you are in such a beautiful place. I wouldn't change that at all. And usually, of course, when we look at a dream, we're looking at it, you know, the day we've woken up or a couple of days later, and it's still relevant to what's happening now. So we won't go back there. I was just curious. But if we were to set a dream alchemy practice for that dream, and say, you know, there's so much in the dream there, but say if we were going to go down the line of saying, okay, imagine you've just had this dream and we found from this that maybe, just maybe, you want to go through this marriage of the inner male and the inner female, but not in a kind of marriage of convenience way, as you say, but more in a releasing the passions and doing effective work in the outer world, you know, being able to truly follow and reveal and your passions, follow your passions and open that work up to other people to enjoy, because we've got that enjoyment there too. You know, then we need to rip open the bodice. We need to open the little church, in a kind of grounded kind of spiritual way. And we definitely don't want to hide the Indian. So we'd be working out some kind of dream alchemy practice, and I would be advocating either a visualization where you would, I'd work with you, you know, to get something that you felt comfortable with and you felt applied, but I'd probably be working to get a visualization where you, while you're awake, imagined yourself back in the dream, only this time, and probably give you the character of the Nordic woman, and have her, or watch her, but it's kind of better to be inhabit one of the bodies sometimes in a dream alchemy practice, because it gets you more in touch with the emotions, and have her walk down to the little church and have it open, and have her bring the Viscount, now the Count, in, and just bring up all, and also invite the Indian girl in, wave away the Nazis with a magic wand, and in their place, because in dreams you must always transform a negative symbol, and in their place have a host of supportive people, you know, which we would work out what they might be, whether it's a host of angels or a host of community artists or whoever it would be, all supporting and celebrating the rebirth of the Indian girl in the spiritual chapel, something along those lines. Or otherwise, in a visualization, knowing that you're an artist, I might give you a work of art along those lines to really basically marry the positive parts of the dream and the parts of the dream that you would like to transform, you know, transforming the marriage of convenience sense at the beginning of the dream into a marriage of passion sense at the end of the dream. How would something like that have fitted doing alchemy for?
I think that sounds spot on, and I think even though I don't remember the particulars of what might have caused this dream to happen, I think it's an ongoing struggle. So I think it makes a lot of sense to work on it in this way.
Okay, that's lovely. I hope you do that. Carla, before going, because I know we've probably just recorded one of our longest podcasts, but I keep looking at Michael, who's recording, and he's saying, no, this is great, just keep going. So, and I'm sure we've got, you know, 99.9% of our audience still with us, because it's been a beautiful exploration. But I do know, because I have visited your blog, and I'd love to give you the opportunity now to share your blog address and some information with everyone that's listening. So take the microphone.
Yeah, okay. Well, I started a blog really around the new year at the encouragement of my daughter. And it's a little dream every day, and then my attempted interpretation, and also a little picture of the dream. And the idea is to introduce people to the ideas of how they can start to interpret their own dreams. So the website is called Young, Y-O-U-N-G, and A-N-D, Young, U-N-J-U-N-G, at blogspot.com. Or just dot blogspot, you know.
I think it's dot blogspot.com. But hey, I'll make sure that it's not only on the podcast blog that associates this with this episode, but I'll also, when I announce this one on my own blog, janetereza.com, I'll put the direct link there for people to come and explore, because beautiful art that you've got. And you did say to me earlier, while we were just setting the recording levels and getting ready to press play for this recording, you said it started out as a lark, but actually it's been a lot of work. So it actually does have a lovely energy, your blog and the pictures and the enjoyment there. So Carla, thank you so much for sharing your dream and your wisdom on today's episode.
Well, thank you so much. It's just been a real treat to get your ideas on these dreams. I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Thank you. A pleasure. And there you go. That was exciting, wasn't it? I'm just going to give Carla's a blog address again, because I think there's an extra full stop in there somewhere. So if you'd like to check out Carla's blog, and I recommend that you do, and there's some beautiful pictures there too. It's called The Daily Dreamer, and it's www.youngandjung, so that's all one word, youngandjung.blogspot.com. I'll also put that link on my blog and all other references that I put to the podcast when I promote it. So that's all for episode 44. Well, some of our podcasts are just getting longer and longer, aren't they? And that one, we had to actually tie up pretty quickly because it was a boiling hot and humid day here in Brisbane and the storms were gathering. And just as we came to the end of Carla's podcast, the thunder started overhead. So I'm actually recording this a few hours later on where it's now cool. We have had lots of rain. We've even had flash floods, but thankfully none around here. And it is refreshing and it is beautiful. And thank you, everyone, for listening to another podcast. You can read more about dreams at www.dream.net.au or on my blog at janetereza.com. And otherwise, I'll see you next Friday for another episode of The Dream Show. This is Jane Teresa Anderson.
If you've had a dream you'd like interpreted on this program, send your email to thedreamshow@lifestylepodnetwork.com. You can also follow Jane on Twitter at twitter.com/dreamsite. The Dream Show is a production of Dreamsite Corporation for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one at lifestylepodnetwork.com.